जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी, जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी। गोपी जनावल्लभ गिरिवर धारी, गोपी जनावल्लभ गिरिवर धारी। यशोद नंदन ब्रज जन रंजन, यमुना तीरावन चारी, यमुना तीरावन चारी, जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी। जय गोपी जनवल्लभ गिरिवर धारी, यशोदानंदन ब्रज जनरंजन, यमुना तीरावन चारी, यमुना तीरावन चारी, जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी। जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी। जय ओम विष्णुपाद परमहंस परिव्राजकाचार्य अष्टोत्तर शत श्री श्रीमद् हिज डिवाइन ग्रेसेस भक्ति वेदांत स्वामी श्रील प्रभुपाद की जय। अनंत कोटि वैष्णव वृंद की जय। ग्रंथराज श्रीमद् भागवतम की जय। ऑल ग्लोरीज टू द असेंबल्ड डिवोटीज, ऑल ग्लोरीज टू द असेंबल्ड डिवोटीज, ऑल ग्लोरीज टू श्री श्री गुरु एंड गौरंग। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। रीडिंग फ्रॉम कैंटो 4 चैप्टर 28, पुरंजन बिकम्स अ वुमन इन द नेक्स्ट लाइफ, टेक्स्ट 47। आत्मानं शोचति दीनं अबंधुं विक्लवाश्रुभिः, स्थनावासि च विपिने सुस्वरं प्ररुरोदसा आत्मानं शोचति दीनं अबन्धुं विक्लवाश्रुभिः स्थनावासि च विपिने सुस्वरं प्ररुरोदसा आत्मानं शोचति दीनं अबन्धुं विक्लवाश्रुभिः स्थनावासि च विपिने सुस्वरं प्ररुरोदसा आत्मानं शोचति दीनं अबन्धुं विक्लवाश्रुभिः स्थनावासि च विपिने सुस्वरं प्ररुरोदसा आत्मानं शोचति दीनं अबन्धुं विक्लवाश्रुवे स्थनावासि च विपिने सुस्वरं प्ररुरोदसा.
Would you like to read the verse? Yeah.
स्थनावासि च विपिने सुस्वरं प्ररुरोदसा.
लेडीस प्लीज.
आत्मानं शोचति दीनं अबन्धुं विक्लवाश्रुभिः स्थनावासि च विपिने सुस्वरं प्ररुरोदसा आत्मानं शोचति दीनं अबन्धुं विक्लवाश्रुभिः स्थनावासि च विपिने सुस्वरं प्ररुरोदसा आत्मानं.
About herself, shochati, lamenting, dinam, wretched, abandhum, without a friend, viklava, broken-hearted, ashrubihi, by tears, stanau, her breasts, asicha, wetting, vipine, in the forest, suswaram, loudly,
praruroda, began to cry, sa, she.
Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. Ki jai. Being now alone and a widow in that forest, the daughter of Vidarbha began to lament, incessantly shedding tears which soaked her breasts and crying very loudly. purport. Figuratively, the queen is supposed to be the disciple of the king. Thus, when the mortal body of the spiritual master expires, his disciples should cry exactly as the queen cries when the king leaves his body. However, the disciple and spiritual master are never separated because the spiritual master always keeps company with the disciple as long as the disciple follows strictly the instructions of the spiritual master. This is called the association of vani or words. Physical presence is called vapu. As long as the spiritual master is physically present, the disciple should serve the physical body of the spiritual master. And when the spiritual master is no longer physically existing, the disciple should serve the instructions of the spiritual master. Om Ajnana Timirandhasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chaksur Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamahyam Dadati Svapadantikam Vancha Kalpaturubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare 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 Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. There's a word
in this verse that sort of sets the tone for the relationship between the spiritual master and the disciple. Said abandhum. Abandhum means without a friend. Now definitely the spiritual master is the dearest friend of the spiritual master, dearest friend of the disciple. But this friendship should not be viewed in the light of the friendships that we have in this world. Generally, the friendships that we have in this world are characterized by mutual sense gratification. Somebody is my friend as long as they do what I like. And I am their friend as long as they do what I like. So it's all based on what I like. And friendships in this world are very easily formed and they're very easily broken. And they're formed on the basis of common sense gratificatory interests. We drink the same drink, we all hang out at the same bar, we root for the same football team, we went to the same college, or we have common interests, you know, we follow the same rock star or whatever. It's very, very mundane criteria on the basis of which friendships are formed. And because the criteria are mundane, friendships also easily break. So we actually pick something that is not friendship and call it friendship. Because we have to give something a name. Right? In this world, everything has to have a name. This, if there is quasi or unnamed relationship, then it becomes uncomfortable. It's not clear. So everything has to have a name. It has to have a definition. So we give names, we assign value to things that actually don't have value. Because people really don't invest in genuine relationships. Although they may themselves be genuine, they may be well-intentioned, they don't know what's the basis of a relationship.
The foundational basis of any relationship is selflessness. Even in a worldly relationship, unless a person is selfless, they cannot have a friendship, they cannot have a relationship. Even if they seemingly have some relationships, they all end up in frustration. So selflessness begins with or has foundation in transcendental relationships. So the spiritual master is the real friend of the disciple. Now the friend, like we were discussing the other day, a definition of friend is that he always looks for the best interest of his friend. In fact, this is Rupa Goswami's definition in Nectar of Devotion. The one who has a friendly relationship with Krishna means that person is always thinking about the best interest of Krishna and only does things that will fulfill the best interest of his friend. That's a friend. So the spiritual master plays that role because the conditioned living entity has only one best interest, somehow or the other, to awaken his relationship with Krishna. There cannot be anything better than this. So the spiritual master in all circumstances will only do things that will help that relationship with Krishna. Now unfortunately sometimes the disciple doesn't like that. The disciple resists or desists or even becomes upset because they cannot see their best interest. Nate vidu svarthagatim hi Vishnu. The conditioned soul cannot see his best interest. Just like a child cannot understand why the parent is forbidding him or her from doing something. The parent can see, but the child cannot see. Nate vidu svarthagatim hi Vishnu. Durashaya hi bahirarthamanina. Because their attention is completely absorbed in things outside of Krishna or in outside of their relationship with Krishna. So the spiritual master actually has a very, very daunting task. The most difficult task is to mold or to purify the false ego of the disciple. This is the most difficult task. In fact, it is so difficult that even the demigods are not given this service. The demigods are given the service to supply air throughout the universe. They are given the service of supplying rain and light and all of that throughout the universe. They can do all of that. But transforming the false ego, that service is given to a very, very special personality called Guru. Sakshat dharitvena samasta shastra uktastata bhave sadbhi eva sadbhi kintu prabhurya priya eva tasya. Because that such a confidential service is given because and empowered to do so because the spiritual master has to transform the false ego into true ego, and this is very, very, very difficult task. So when one comes in contact with such a person who is empowered to do so, then one should know that one has already achieved all success in life. There is nothing more to achieve actually. One has already achieved it. Everything outside of that is bonus. Like Vaisheshika Prabhu told us, we're not distributing any books, we're just going to go touch the pavement. After that, everything is bonus. If you do that, then we're successful. They're not the same, but having come across, having met, and having made a connection with a bona fide guru is the perfection of one's life. Now, from here on, one can decide what to do with that asset, what to do with the greatest embodiment of Krishna's mercy. Take it wholeheartedly or not take it, or take it half-heartedly. One who takes it half-heartedly really doesn't fully benefit from that gift. One who takes that relationship wholeheartedly fully benefits from that relationship. So naturally, when that connection is broken on a physical plane, then there is shochati, severe or deep lamentation. So here the queen, who is figuratively the disciple of the king, she is crying pitiably. Shochati dinam. She feels completely wretched. Dinam also means helpless. Abandhum viklava ashrubi. She's crying so incessantly and so heavily that her breasts are completely wet, and she's crying loudly. And Prabhupada says that the disciples should cry exactly as the queen cries. So this does not mean to make a show of crying or wailing. That show doesn't work. The tears will come from the heart when there is a relationship, when one actually values that relationship. So they have a sense of what they're missing or what they're going to miss. The company, the guidance, the physical inspiring presence of the spiritual master. When that's not there, or in this case, the Prabhupada's saying, when we'll not be there anymore, because the spiritual master has left the mortal body, then the heart cries. It's not like false tears or just a show bottle, an exhibition of tears or lament or sentimental. Because sentimental people also cry. In fact, they cry all the time. So Prabhupada's cautioning us against sentimentalism. Therefore the word abandhum, one understands true friendship. And then he says, however, the disciple and master are never separated. So he's encouraging that outside of the physical plane of connection, there is the spiritual plane of connection. Now this is not possible in worldly relationships, because the words uttered by worldly people are material. So you cannot have a spiritual relationship when the exchanges are material. Suppose we, two friends, they sang movie songs together. And when one of them dies, the other cries pitiably, "Nobody to sing those songs with me." There's memory, but a spiritual connection is not there. The spiritual connection between the spiritual master and the disciple exists because of instructions. And those instructions are what allow for one to access the presence of the spiritual master, even after the spiritual master has left. So the physical association is called vapu. Vapu means body, and vani means sound. So the spiritual master may not exist in vapu form, but he always exists in the vani form. So many of us, we've never met Prabhupada, except Jitendra Prabhu and a few others. We have not seen Prabhupada, but our connection with Prabhupada is through his sound. In this room, I mean, except for Jitendra Prabhu, others don't have an experience of the spiritual master leaving the mortal body in this room. There are others who have that. And that's a very, very deep loss from a physical perspective. And those who have a strong connection with the spiritual master's sound vibration will not feel a sense of loss through the rest of their life. Not that they don't miss the spiritual master's presence, but the sound presence is always there. So for that, what it means is that during the spiritual master's presence, if one has not cultivated the relationship on the basis of hearing, then that asset is completely lost. One cannot access unless one re-establishes through sound. That's the only way. So here Prabhupada says, the spiritual master always keeps company as long as the disciple strictly follows the instructions. Because the instruction actually brings forth or brings to life the person who's given the instruction. So when we study Bhagavad Gita, for that matter, these are instructions given by Krishna. So many people who read the Bhagavad Gita, not the Bhagavad Gita as it is, we're just talking about Bhagavad Gita, they don't feel Krishna's presence. Because they're not reading it as Krishna's instructions to them. They're not reading it as Krishna's expression of what is best for us. They're reading it as an academic exercise. They're reading it as something worldly. Oh, these are nice lessons on morality or something. And at best, that's what they get out of it. The difference in the Bhagavad Gita translations out there, the Bhagavad Gita as it is that Prabhupada brings us very, very, very close to Krishna. In this manner, because he allows us to feel Krishna's presence in the pages of the Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam. Because there is a relationship of service. So one who's not serving Krishna, one who's not following the instructions of Krishna like that, one cannot feel Krishna's presence. Similarly, one cannot feel the Guru's presence when one doesn't follow Guru's instructions. In fact, in many cases, the separation between the disciple and Guru is an opaque wall. It's so thick that they don't consider what is pleasing to Guru. They're just driven by their mind. They follow life as the mind dictates. And the Guru is just a figurehead personality. They have a picture on the wall or picture on the altar. Or at best, that's about it. Or a very sentimental sort of connection. For some persons, that separation is a transparent wall. They can see the Guru, but they cannot access. Because that transparent veneer is that the heart is still not ready or not fully absorbing the instruction. They can see the Guru, oh my Guru is there, but cannot follow the instructions. They cannot follow instructions because they're too driven by or controlled by the pulling or pushing of the mind. So Guru's role is to counteract the mind actually. And remove the contaminated desires, remove the distractions, remove the wrong conceptions, and purify it and fill it with proper desires, proper conceptions, proper considerations. Because the mind is filled by condition, by habit, is filled with selfishness. What's the best for me? And the Guru has to counteract that with what's best for Krishna, in which is my happiness actually. That's why if the connection is not strong, one doesn't understand, one doesn't appreciate why the Guru's instructions sometimes are painful, seemingly painful. Just as when there is, you know, a bandage and it sticks and you have to rip it off, it pulls some of the hair along with it. I had this experience recently. And it's painful, but it's important. So one doesn't see the ultimate interest in it and says, oh. So following instructions cannot also be done blindly or sentimentally. It should be done on the basis of a relationship. If one fully understands, or at least develops progressively this understanding, that in my guru's heart there is nothing else except my welfare. That is all the consideration. There is nothing else in their heart. Whether I understand it or not, even theoretically, if I operate on that basis, I will be very, very happy. And every instruction is meant for only one purpose, going back to Godhead. Fully realizing one's relationship with Krishna. All that means that my aspirations, my thoughts, my considerations, my speech, my actions are all meant for that purpose, for serving Krishna. That's a purified state of consciousness. As long as the spiritual master is physically present, the disciple should serve the physical body of the spiritual master. This does not mean serve only the physical body of the spiritual master. Then it becomes sentimental. Because there are many persons who, when the guru comes, their mood of service is really top-notch. And it's quite likely that it's the power of his presence that inspires service. And everyone wants to, you know, impress the spiritual master. They want to put their best foot forward. Within the consciousness also actually comes, oh, he's here, you know, I should be very nice to my fellow devotees and speak nicely. And then the spiritual master leaves and everything just goes back down to bickering and, you know, fault finding, laziness, whatever is this, you know, intentional or unintentional laziness. But we go back to old habits. You know, that's why when guru comes, Bhagavatam class is full. When guru is not there, there's few trickles, you know, some sparing spots of people here and there. Of course, guru's words are powerful, so I understand that. But it's the spirit of that this is important for my devotional life. It is not just that I have to mark presence when my guru shows up, and then otherwise I don't show up. But serving the physical body doesn't mean only physical body. Along with it is the cultivation of serving the instructions. Because when the physical body is no more, instructions are there. And our whole Vedic body of knowledge is filled with examples and glories of serving Guru. In fact, there is so glorified that there are hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of stories of how persons have benefited simply from that service, even if they have no intellectual capacity whatsoever. In fact, the dullest of people have become the greatest of personalities simply on this one basis, that they have served their guru. That is the transformational potency. All things that one, all the liabilities vanish and all assets are bestowed. But one may think, you know, I may have other assets. And yesterday we were reading a verse from Padyavali by Rupa Goswami. I can't remember the verse, but the English translation is that Krishna is not attracted by anything material that you can offer to him. I said, what is it that one can offer anyway? Where did Dhruva's determination come from? Where did Gajendra's power come from? Where did someone else, I mean, there's a whole list of devotees and all their greatness. But that's not what was attracting to Krishna. It is what is attracting is that they offered themselves to Krishna's service. So anything can happen. The worst situations can go away and the best situations will definitely come when one is following the instructions of Guru. Mukam karoti vachalam. The dumb person can speak very eloquently. Panghu langhayate girim. A crippled person can jump over mountains. Yat kripal. So one who has accessed the mercy of Guru. And that comes from actual service of both the body and sound vibration. So naturally when that is gone, the loss is intense, is severe. That's when the heart cries. Now usually the heart cries when we get an instruction. Oh, why such an instruction? Oh, doesn't understand me. Why so difficult instructions? Or doubts, or challenges, or something. Of course, we cannot artificially place ourselves in the most surrendered position, because then the fall is the deepest for us. But at least that's the level of relationship to be built, to be developed. In whatever time Krishna has given. And now Krishna is controlling. Any time he can decide for the spiritual master to move from this realm of service to another realm of service. Then lamenting will not help. Oh, I did not make the best use of the presence of my spiritual master. That will not help. A final point, between Vani service and Vapu service, Vani service is better and sustainable. Not that Vapu service should not be there, it should be there. But Vani service is sustainable. There are many disciples of Prabhupada who served the physical body of Prabhupada very, very intensely. Some of them did not serve Prabhupada's instruction. And today they're hardly practicing devotional service. There are some who served Prabhupada's body very nicely and they served his instructions very nicely and they're still doing very well in Krishna consciousness. But interestingly, there are some who never served Srila Prabhupada's body. They never had that opportunity. They only served his instructions and they're still there. They're still doing very well. There are persons who were initiated by Prabhupada and never saw Prabhupada. They were initiated by mail, but still dedicated their lives to serving Prabhupada's instructions and are fantastic devotees. So when the spiritual master is there, all emphasis is on the comfort of the physical body of the spiritual master. It's not a bodily consideration. It is the expression of gratitude for that personality who's playing that role. Because anyway, a disciple cannot do more than that. In the final pastimes of Sri Madhavendra Puri, when Madhavendra Puri, who's the grand spiritual master of Lord Chaitanya, he had two disciples. Madhavendra Puri had two disciples, Sri Ishwara Puri and Sri Ramchandra Puri. Sorry. Now both give, or they epitomize, two different mentalities. Both were there during the spiritual master's passing or during his final times. And Ramchandra Puri did not serve his spiritual master. All he thought about was when Madhavendra Puri was in this deep lamenting spiritual mood that, oh my dear Krishna, when will I ever see you? I have spent all my life and I have not had the opportunity of seeing you. Will I ever see you? Like it was deeply devotional mood. Ramchandra Puri said, why are you lamenting like this? You should focus on Brahman. So Madhavendra Puri told him, get out of here. Just to see your face will be sinful. Just get out of here. On the other hand, Ishwara Puri didn't say a word. He just kept serving the spiritual master. Cleaned his body, cleaned his urine and stool, and cleaned everything up and kept everything, and used to recite all these wonderful verses from Bhagavatam. And he was blessed with a wonderful service to be Lord Chaitanya's spiritual master. Not that that's a title, but that's a service that he was given, that you will serve Lord Chaitanya this way. So Varni service is the most important. No, Varni service just doesn't mean that the spiritual master's lecture is playing and we are somewhere around. Varni means that our thoughts and speech are guided by those words. Now, we cannot guide our actions and speech and thoughts by those words unless we value those words. And we value those words only when we value the person. And then it is a clash between my instinct or my habit versus those words. And it's a battle. Who wins? It's not a toss. Today, I will go by what my mind says today because it was heads. When it is tails, I listen to what my guru said. It's not like that. Okay, I could have narrated a couple of stories, but I intentionally did not because I didn't want to lighten it in any way. Okay, let's see if there are any comments, because someone can add something to enrich the class and then we can see.
If a child has a parent that leaves while he's a child, it doesn't usually impact him so profoundly.
Correct.
Just due to immaturity. So also, when we are immature in our devotional service, the disappearance of the spiritual master may not so profoundly impact us.
Right.
It may not be able to cry. Even we may see others crying and all that, but just it isn't there. So I was wanting to know that doesn't necessarily indicate someone's insincerity.
Yeah.
But just maybe lack of maturity. And yeah. So then I was wanting to know, so then later on he can become mature by serving the Vani of his spiritual master and make further progress. I was kind of wondering how that works out, because it's kind of interesting how I was thinking kind of in a rhythmic sort of way. That was the first thing that was coming to my mind, like in terms of argument. If I can just serve the Vani and become mature, because my spiritual master left when I was immature, how might we address that particular doubt? I don't know if that's inappropriate.
The doubt that for someone who's not mature, the spiritual master is leaving, they may not cry, like Prabhupada saying one should cry. Right. So there's a difference in this sort of crying and the worldly sort of crying. This sort of crying is a deeper, I would like to say, spiritual emotion. All our acharyas cry. In fact, you know, in America or in some of the cultures, men crying is a really funny thing. Men should not cry. Like, how can men cry? All our acharyas, they cry. In fact, they say, Kandiya, Kandiya, I'm going to cry and hit my head against a rock. Narottam Das Thakur says, I cry incessantly. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, I cry a lot. Prabhupada writes like that. All our acharyas, they cry. So that crying is not this kind of crying, the worldly sort of crying. So one may be immature. First of all, because the Ritviks are not serving Varni. It's a wrong idea, right? The one who's serving Varni does not serve this Varni because I like it, and then this Varni I don't follow because I don't like it. That's called Ardha Kukuti Nyaya, half hen logic. Half hen logic means I only take things that I like, and what I don't like, I don't take. Because the Guru gives instructions, something, do this. I like that very much. I am going to make this instruction my life and soul. Oh, well, you should also eat Karela sabji. No way, I don't like Karela. I will not follow that instruction. So the Ritviks are not serving Vani. The Ritviks are serving their own Mano Dharma, is this concocted idea. However, for a person who may be immature, the passing of the spiritual master, and doesn't feel that's... This crying is out of separation. So separation and presence both exist simultaneously. That's the understanding. So although they may not have cried when the spiritual master left, they will cry as they mature. They will cry in that separation, and in that they will feel the presence. Both exist simultaneously. The separation and presence exist simultaneously. So it may not be at that time, but then we have disappearance day festivals. So as they mature, they will feel the intensity of what it means for the spiritual master's disappearance. The most important thing is, one should not wait to look for, is this person crying? If he's not crying, then he's not missing the spiritual master too much. It's a wrong yardstick also. Here Prabhupada's speaking in the context that the queen was crying incessantly at the passing of the spiritual master, at the passing of her husband. What is the indicator, yardstick of attachment to Guru is how their life is dedicated to serving the Guru's instruction. That's a better indicator. If you go for externalities, then we'll get cheated. So maturity may come with time. It may come with following deeply the instructions. In fact, that will come naturally as one follows. So at that moment, it may not be like that. But the sense of separation will still be there, or will manifest. His hand was up first, Iman, or whoever you'd work it out.
Thank you so much for your class. My question was somewhat connected to what you were just speaking about. I was thinking about disciples who took some instruction of Srila Prabhupada and really made it their life and soul, like for instance, like Burijan Prabhu and his study of Bhagavad Gita, or some other, like Vaisheshika Prabhu in book distribution, or Ayendra Prabhu in doing Harinam. So then you were making the point that there's such a thing as half-hand logic. I take something, I don't take something. So then, how do we... Obviously, these disciples are not doing that. Otherwise, they wouldn't be so successful in their devotional service. So how do we see this clearly that, you know, although the spiritual master is saying a lot of different things, there is some particular instruction that's going to become my life and soul. And that doesn't mean that I'm excluding his other instructions. I'm respecting them also, but this is the one that I will... You see what I'm saying?
That's different from half-hand logic.
Exactly, it is. So I'm trying to understand how do we... what?
There can be a set of instructions that can guide a person's life. But that doesn't mean that they will say, I like Prabhupada's instruction that one should eat prasadam, all wonderful things that that we offer to Krishna. But I don't like the instruction that one should follow regulative principles. I don't like that. I like Prabhupada's instruction that you should chant and dance, but I don't like his instruction that you should not hear from Mayavadis. Mayavadis also can say something valuable. No. That is half-hand logic. Full-hand logic is that you accept the whole set of instructions, and there can be a particular set of instructions within that that could guide your life. And that's perfectly all right. There is variety. Some people have inspiration for kirtan, some people have inspiration for book distribution, some people have inspiration for studying Bhagavad Gita, according to the examples you gave. And you know what? For some persons, it may not be that they have to be a star like that. They may just chant their 16 rounds and follow regulative principles, and they may fully succeed in their life. We don't have to be a shining star because you followed Prabhupada's example. I mean, the instructions. Not necessarily. There are examples where there was one Mataji All she did was in some temple, took care of the gift store, all the register, chanted her 16 rounds and followed 4 regulative principles. At the time of death, she was peaceful, chanting Hare Krishna and passed away. Unknown, one of those unsung, unknown heroes of this world. But that's what it is. It is different from half-hand logic. Yeah? Part B? Yeah. Okay. Karunanidhi Prabhu?
Hare Krishna. I was trying to add something that I remember in Chaitanya Charitamrita. That means when Ishwarapuri, he gave instruction to Govinda, you go and serve Lord Chaitanya, serve Chaitanya. Then he came and expressed his feeling, that instruction what has been given by his spiritual master to Lord Chaitanya. Then Lord Chaitanya said, how can you are in the level of, you are just like my spiritual master, because you are the servant of my spiritual master. So how can I accept your service? Then he asked, Lord Chaitanya personally asked to Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, so what is your opinion? How can, then Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya said, it is the instruction of Guru. And if you do not follow the instruction of Guru, it is a great devastation. So, and he also quoted how that Parshuram, he killed his mother Renuka, you know, by the instruction of his father. So you have to accept. Then Lord Chaitanya accepted that Govinda as his personal assistant. So that's so how instruction is so powerful.
Jitendra Prabhu, thank you for adding that.
I was thinking of this newspaper, devotees were circulating this like a magazine or just a pamphlet, and it was called Krishna Light. That was about 20 years or a little more ago, and it drew a lot of adverse reactions from the more staunch devotees. But there was a couple of devotees here, and they were kind of becoming a little wayward, you know, and they were thinking, you know, like you have Bud Light or Miller Light. Well, they were saying, well, let's have Krishna Light, you know, we'll lighten up the program a little, and it won't be so austere, but we'll still be in the perimeter of, you know, devotional service. And I thought that was kind of interesting, you know,
that is Tatastha Shakti squared. Already marginal, this is, you know, even more marginal situation.
Yeah, like, you know, maybe we can smoke a few cigarettes or, you know, drink a few beers or something.
Shri Vishnu,
like that.
Shri Vishnu, Shri Vishnu.
But then another thing is, I remember Srila Prabhupada reading, he was in Los Angeles, and he was on a morning walk, and he was with the devotees, and one devotee said, Prabhupada, the deities look very beautiful today, and he says, yes, this is what I'm afraid of, because after I leave, the standard might go down. And then another thing I remember, the devotees were serving Srila Prabhupada very nicely, and, you know, they were taking care of him, you know, very, very nicely. And he said, well, I want some of you to go to distant places and start preaching. And they didn't want to do that. They said, oh, we want to be close to you, Srila Prabhupada. And he says, well, you'll be closer to me if you serve my instruction, you know. So that just came to mind.
Okay, Bhakta Luk and then Abhello.
Hare Krishna. So I've heard within our society of Krishna consciousness, not from many devotees, but some devotees are having this mood that, you know, it's not so important who you take initiation from, that the purpose of initiation is simply to get connected to the parampara, like you get plugged in. So I have initiation with my spiritual master. He has initiation from Srila Prabhupada. Therefore, I am connected to Prabhupada. Therefore, I am connected to Krishna. And so they're having this very kind of like mechanical, automatic understanding of it. You know, it's not so important who is giving the initiation, just so that we're in the bona fide parampara. Right. So I was wondering if you could just speak a little bit on what is the actual, how to authenticate, you know, our position as disciple, that we're actually a bona fide disciple and that we are connected. Because it seems to me that just receiving the formality of initiation is not really what's, you know, if the disciple is supposed to be crying upon the disappearance of his guru, then that's, you know, that's a very high platform, it seems.
So first let's level the playing field. This does not only mean Diksha Guru. Okay, because generally when we say, use the word Guru, somehow we have this, indoctrination that it means Diksha Guru. Not necessarily. In fact, Diksha Guru also, but not just Diksha Guru, first of all. Anybody who has nourished our spiritual life, and who's, they are in that position. Second, the first statement that people say, well, it really doesn't matter who you get initiated by, because anyway I'm going to get connected to Prabhupada, and that's my connection to Krishna. That statement is weak. Or you can take it as a glorification of that particular Diksha Guru. Okay? It is weak in the sense, from their perspective, they're minimizing the role of that particular Diksha Guru. That ultimately my connection with Krishna is because of my connection with Prabhupada. It's not necessarily a completely true statement. Although it is, in and of itself, it's a true statement. Anyone connected to Prabhupada naturally will be connected to Krishna. One can look at it as a unintended glorification of the Guru, because you ask any of the Diksha Gurus that what is your main purpose in accepting disciples? And they will say, so that they feel a strong connection with Prabhupada. They feel that they can guide their lives by Prabhupada's teachings. Therefore, in all initiations, you hear, how many rounds will you chant? What are the four regulative principles? Do you commit to following Prabhupada's teachings for the rest of your life? And there is one more that most gurus don't ask, but you know, His Holiness Radhanath Maharaj emphasizes. Will you commit to being the servant of the servant of the servant for the rest of your life? But they're all connected, they're all interlinked. Every guru within the ISKCON movement wants us to be connected to our founder Acharya. So they're not thinking, I am the connection to Krishna, or my disciples all will, which is also true, we will. But they're connecting us to the parampara. It's the strength of their relationship with Prabhupada. If the Guru is not connected to Prabhupada, assuming if there's some accidental chance that that person who's accepting or taking Diksha or giving Diksha is not connected to Prabhupada, suppose, rare, but I mean, even if it's hypothetical, then how will the Dikshit, the disciple, find connection with Prabhupada? Impossible. Then there's no connection with Krishna. Interesting, yesterday I heard, and I want to say it openly, yesterday I heard, openly because I'm inviting you to do the same if you like. I heard a lecture by Hridayananda Maharaj, on the recent Prabhupada during the recent Prabhupada festival in Los Angeles. And he spoke on this. And he was far, he is much more eloquent than I am, about how he, playing the role of a guru, means he is connecting his disciples to Prabhupada. And he said, if I did not do that, then when I leave, all my disciples are left without Prabhupada's shelter. Then I have not fulfilled what it means that Prabhupada is the founder acharya for all of us. So he said that how many ever generations you go forward, for every person in the future, Srila Prabhupada is still the ISKCON founder acharya. And all of their life their lives are guided by Prabhupada's teachings. So every generation has the responsibility of connecting people to Prabhupada's teachings, to Prabhupada as a person. Not just teachings, you can't separate, here are the teachings, but he is five generations away, forget it. So Diksha is such an important aspect because you get connected to every acharya in the parampara through the immediate acharya in the parampara. Because if that's not there, no connections there. So it's a wrong statement that I'm just plugged in. It depends on, what the socket looks like. So it's important. Very important. So it's a inaccurate statement to say like that. Yeah? Avella?
I just wanted to make a comment. In Gita Nagari, Ed had the service to serve directly Maharaj, and had the service in the registration table. And I was thinking that, and I actually had the realization that this was actually a direct service to Maharaj as well, serving Rasika Manjari Mataji in whatever way possible.
Can you speak into the mic and slowly? Yeah.
And later on, I also thought that every action, whether we're in the presence of devotees or not, is service to the spiritual master. So we should act accordingly. And just thinking that, it really makes me happy whether whatever services I'm doing, knowing that this is for Maharaj, the service gets that importance, and from my side, I also get that satisfaction. So it's nice.
Okay, anything else? Okay, thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.